The Lord be with you.
And also with you.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. As Jesus passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered, "Neither he nor his parents sinned. It is so that the works of God might be made visible through him." We have to do the works of the one who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world. When he had said this, he spat on the ground and made clay with the saliva and smeared the clay on his eyes and said to him, "Go, wash in the pool of Siloam," which means sent. So he went and washed and came back able to see. His neighbors and those who had seen him earlier as a beggar said, "Isn't this the one who used to sit and beg?" Some said, "It is." But others said, "No, he just looks like him." He said, "I am." So they said to him, "How are your eyes opened?" And he replied, "The man called Jesus made clay and anointed my eyes and told me, 'Go to Siloam and wash.' So I went there and washed and was able to see." And they said to him, "Where is he?" He said, "I don't know." They brought the one who was once blind to the Pharisees. Now Jesus had made clay and opened his eyes on a Sabbath. So then the Pharisees also asked him how he was able to see. And he said to them, "He put clay on my eyes. I washed and now I can see." So some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God because he does not keep the Sabbath." But others said, "How can a sinful man do such signs?" And there was a division among them. So they said to the blind man again, "What do you have to say about him, since he opened your eyes?" He said, "He is a prophet." Now the Jews did not believe that he had been blind and gained his sight until they summoned the parents of the one who had gained his sight. They said to them, "Is this your son, who you say was born blind? How does he now see?" His parents answered and said, "We know that this is our son and that he was born blind. We do not know how he sees now, nor do we know who opened his eyes. Ask him. He is of age. He can speak for himself." His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jews. For the Jews had already agreed that if anyone acknowledged him as the Christ, he would be expelled from the synagogue. For this reason, his parents said, "He is of age. Question him." So a second time they called the man who had been blind and said to him, "Give God the praise. We know that this man is a sinner." He replied, "If he is a sinner, I do not know. One thing I do know is that I was blind and now I see." So they said to him, "What did he do for you? How did he open your eyes?" He answered them, "I told you already and you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples too?" They ridiculed him and said, "You are that man's disciple. We are the disciples of Moses. We know that God spoke to Moses, but we do not know where this one is from." The man answered and said to them, "This is what is so amazing, that you do not know where he is from, yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners, but if one is devout and does his will, he listens to him. It is unheard of that anyone ever opened the eyes of a person born blind. If this man were not from God, he would not have been able to do anything." They answered and said to him, "You were born totally in sin, and you are trying to teach us?" Then they threw him out. When Jesus heard that they had thrown him out, He found him and said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" He answered and said, "Who is he, sir, that I might believe in him?" Jesus said to him, "You have seen him, and the one speaking with you is he." He said, "I do believe, Lord," and worshipped him. Then Jesus said, "I came into this world for judgment, so that those who do not see might see, and that those who do see might become blind." Some of the Pharisees who were with him heard this and said to him, "Surely we are not also blind, are we?" And Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would have no sin. But now you are saying, 'We see,' so your sin remains." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
As we hear about the attempted regime change or regime change in Tunisia and Egypt and now in Libya, we have good evidence right here that God, like, loves the underdog. Think what God is asking Samuel to do. There's a king seated on the throne named Saul, and he's supposed to go and anoint another king. If you had read the two chapters ahead of this, Samuel's like, "Sorry, can't do that, Lord. I'd be in serious trouble." And the Lord's like, no, "I've chosen my servant from among Jesse's sons." Samuel's like, no, "You don't understand. You've already chosen Saul." And the Lord's like, "Well, yeah, but he's not doing so well." And it's like, did God make a mistake? Or does God see the best in us and do everything that is in God's power to have us grow into that vision? And I turn my back and walk another direction. It's interesting, right? Because Samuel shows up and he wants to anoint the eldest son, as it should be, being an eldest son. But no, that's not who's chosen. The guy who didn't even get invited to the party is chosen, right? They thought so little of David that they didn't even bother inviting him to the city feast. The great prophet Samuel's in town. They're going to sacrifice to the great God who is one. And David didn't even get an invitation. He was a nobody. And God chose that one. This little David. So we have, right, God's vision being different than our vision in that first reading. And then we have this coming to sight and deeper into darkness in the gospel. The coming to sight is certainly the man born blind. Now, I don't know anyone who's been born blind, but I did get to see the movie Ray. Any Ray Charles fans? Two of us? Okay, four of us. So if you haven't seen it, there's a scene in there early on in the movie where Ray loses his sight. And I could relate to that because my own aunt, Martha, had lost her sight after a traumatic accident in her teen years. And Martha went on to work for AT&T as a switchboard operator, all by touch, where you had to pull the wire out and put it in above. Right? This is maybe my great aunt Martha. She's called Aunt Martha, but I mean, she died in her early 80s when I was like 9, so she was my great aunt. And Martha could do everything by touch. Now, we were in serious trouble if we moved the furniture around in the house. But she taught me a lot about seeing in a different way. And so as the little toddler and eventually as a little kid, I would often close my eyes and just bump into things for the fun of it at that point in my life. But I was trying to learn to see how she saw. Now, Martha lost her sight late in life, and so she still had a very well-developed, right, optical part of her brain, optical cortex, I guess. And she would often see something she described like the aurora borealis in front of her eyes. She would see colors and shapes and patterns. She was totally blind. She couldn't discern anything, so this was all going on inside her brain. You know what Martha's favorite thing to do was when she came to California, other than hanging out with her favorite grandnephews, was to take us to the zoo. And I'm like, didn't make any sense to me, because for me, the zoo is all about seeing the animals, right? And if they're not doing anything, we're like, right, stupid zebras just standing around. We want to see them do something. So we'd go to the wild animal park, which was better because they'd be running around. But Martha found the zoo fascinating. The sounds of all the birds and the different sounds of the animals and the tremendous smells. But also just the sounds of the different kinds of leaves. The San Diego Zoo has huge forests of eucalyptus and huge forests of bamboo. And all the scents of the different plants in bloom. Martha was in heaven at the San Diego Zoo. Sometimes we'd go twice within 2 weeks when she was down visiting us. She could see in a way that I couldn't see at the zoo. Now, what's going on in this reading? Here's a man born blind. Zero optical cortex, right? And no physical therapy afterwards. I love Jesus' miracles. Right? I had knee surgery, and there's weeks of physical therapy, learning how to walk again. And Jesus is just like, go for it. You're fixed. And you're like, what? I don't have to work through this? Right? The man also knew how to find Jesus again. Couldn't recognize him, but walked back and praised God, having been healed. Right? He had to touch his way to the Pool of Siloam, and he probably ran back along the same road. What's going on here? Well, Jesus being, maybe Jesus healed every day of the week, and we only hear about the times he heals on the Sabbath because they got him in trouble. Or he just saved all his healing for the Sabbath just to kind of irk the local authorities. That's my Jesus. But Jesus wanted to make a point that if you can't see me as Messiah, you are blind. In the worst sense of the word, unable to see the truth. Why are we here this morning? Because we see Jesus as Messiah. Right? Why would we take time out of our weekend? Our weekend, right? This is our time to have off from work. Or was it time set aside for God? That's why Jesus got in trouble. Because the Sabbath was time set aside for God alone and not for our work or our pleasure or our yard projects, etc. Jesus calls us to sight in a new way. And I'd suggest that there are two kinds of blindness that I often experience. First is I lose some vision in a particular area in my life. Say I've been doing really good in prayer, and then I kind of give it up for a while, and Lent reminds me, oh yeah, I should pray. Right? You kind of just lose the ability to see that area of the life. The other one is, I'm driving down I-17, which has 6 lanes of traffic going both directions, and everybody's doing 75 to 80. And I tried to change lanes, and I didn't check my blind spot, because, how often do you check your blind spot in Petersburg? And I look over as I'm sliding into the next lane, right? Bump, 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 bump. And there's a huge truck. I'm going to get killed if I don't check my blind spot. Jesus is suggesting the same thing today. We have areas of blindness in our life that we never look into because, we're not interested personally, right? They might be those annoying qualities, hopefully, eventually endearing qualities that each of us have. One of my friends in preaching class would touch his nose like this every time he was about to turn the page, because he preached from notes. And I'm like, all right, here comes page 5. He touched his nose and turned the page. And he didn't believe us. Everybody in class saw it until he watched the video. Right? That's how blind we are to these blind spots in our life. But there's probably something more dangerous than simple idiosyncrasies. It's the times where we don't see what God is asking us to do, calling us to be bigger than ourselves. I think of the life of the saints. And when I read their biographies, I'm converted from partial blindness to maybe partial sightness. I don't know that I've gotten rid of all my blind spots, but I'll try to work on one or another every year. And reading the lives of the saints brings change in my life. If you need a copy, go to the internet, right? There are 700,000 lives of the saints on the internet. You could read 1,000 a day and not run out for a year. That's crazy. There's a lot of saints, and every single one of them is different. And in that witness, that cloud of witnesses, we'll see a little bit of what we can do. Some of the things are impossible, right? I'm not going to be Mother Teresa. But I could be a little bit more like Francis in Care of Creation, or Maximilian Kolbe in Reaching Out to the Poor and sharing the Eucharist. Maybe. God is calling us to something way bigger than ourselves. We have to look to mentors in the saints who've been there ahead of us. And that'll set us free of our blindness. So your homework this week. There's homework every week, I know. But this is fun homework. Find at least one saint and write an essay. Or a poem. Or a picture, right? This is homework. I want to see it next week. Of course, I'm not going to be here. So you can email them to me. But I'd say take this seriously. Find a saint. Like, what's Mother Teresa's motto? Why did she leave her comfortable convent where she was already a nun and working for the poor, educating girls? Why did she leave? Does anybody know? She saw people dying on the street, yes. But the big one was she went out to the front door to get food for the girls because there was a riot going on, right? This is during the independence movement in India. And she went to the, the warehouse to get some food and eventually got some and got some help by the authorities to bring it back. But this beggar kept saying, I thirst. I thirst. I thirst, and that just wouldn't leave her consciousness. And she eventually had to go and quench his and every other poor person in Calcutta's thirst. And maybe our thirst as well. Right? How many of us have learned something about being human from Mother Teresa and her life? Right? Especially if you read this most recent biography of her writings where it was great, joyful, interesting relationship with God until she actually started working with the poor, and then it went flat, cold, and dark. And it'd be like, back to the convent. Mother Teresa said, no, here's Jesus and the poor. I'll work here, even if it doesn't feel good, even if it doesn't bring me joy. I'm like one tough Ukrainian 4'5" woman, right? We can learn from the lives of the saints. So your homework? Do that essay. It could be a poem, a picture, but learn at least about one saint that you might grow in sight and maybe stretch a little bit further over to see those blind spots.